Here's Buster Olney, who wrote a book called The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty, which was November 4th of 2001, the year they lost Game 7 in Arizona. 8 years later to the day, they win another World Series. So, Buster, let's start it with that as we thank you for getting up early for us. I know you've slept about 10 minutes this month. Let's start with that. Is this the beginning of another Yankee run?
It may well be. I don't think there's any question about it because they have really, first off, they've rebuilt their farm system, and we're just starting to see the beginning of that with guys like Java Chamberlain and Phil Hughes. You know, the position players coming along are getting better. And I think the Yankees are being much more efficient in how they're spending their money than they were, you know, earlier in this decade when they began to sort of spin downward. And I think the examples of the fact that they spent on CC Sabathia and Mark Teixeira and AJ Burnett, who not only were the good players on the field for them this year and did a terrific job in that regard, they were great guys in the clubhouse. And you know, and we can't ignore this reality either. As the Yankees get more powerful, as they have moved to this new stadium, as they're making more money, the disparity between them and the other teams is growing, and we're going to see a number of situations that come up this winter in which they're going to be able to take advantage of the market, whereas on the other hand, there are going to be a lot of teams that are not, and then I think that'll certainly help the Yankees' chances of continuing forward.
Everybody in baseball or fans certainly waiting for something like that to change, maybe to help give their team more of a chance. You fine with Matsui getting the MVP? No issues there, right?
No, absolutely not. I mean, it was amazing to watch last night. I mean, we talked yesterday about how you could look for Pedro's fastball early in the game as a barometer of how he would do. He's throwing 84 miles an hour. He could not get the ball through Hideki Matsui. You remember in game two, he tried to get it past him with curveballs. Matsui hits a home run to break a tie. And then last night, he tried to beat him with a fastball inside. Matsui clubs it for a two-run homer in the first at-bat. And then in his next at-bat, Carlos Ruiz sets up outside for a fastball away at 89 miles per hour. Matsui hits a two-run single that beats him. I mean, look, this matchup, but just in the end, it just turned out that
it favored the Yankees. We'll pause 60 seconds. And Buster, you were talking as we paused for SportsCenter there about how the matchup of Martinez and Matsui wound up being a huge advantage to the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, guys. No there was a fastball away, that Martinez threw an 89 miles per hour for that two-run single. So in the end, Pedro Martinez just could not get the ball past Hideki Matsui. And, I mean, that's the reason why Matsui is the MVP, because of what he did against Pedro Martinez.
And you talked about, before that, about efficient moves Yankees are making right now. What's going to be the efficient move for them next year, Johnny Damon or Hideki Matsui?
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of play them off each other a little bit. Look, I think in the end, I think it's more likely they bring back Johnny Damon, but it wouldn't surprise me if they basically set prices on both guys. And whatever those numbers are, if it's Johnny Damon, maybe it's $10 million. If it's Matsui, maybe it's $3 million. And tell them, look, guys, we're going to bring back one guy. The first guy we hear from, that's who we're going to bring back. But I think the way that they're trending, they're trying to get younger and more athletic. Damon can still play in the field. Matsui really can't. So I think that in the end, it's probably more likely that they bring back Damon. And then, bring up one of their young guys, such as an Austin Jackson from the minor leagues next year.
Mike and Mike, Buster Olney is with us. All right, let's look back over the series in total. And to me, it really turned in two spots. After the split in New York, I think you really could look at it and say the Phillies had the advantage in the World Series. And then Andy Pettitte comes out and has nothing to start Game 3 on the road. And he winds up sort of scraping himself off the floor after walking in a run and giving up three early runs. And the Phillies have a 3-0 lead. And their reigning World Series MVP, Cole Hamels, who had a very forgettable year and a particularly forgettable last couple of weeks, was not able to hold it. And to me, that's really where the World Series began to turn.
That's the first spot, and I totally agree with you and give credit to Pettitte for finding his way through those six innings despite the fact that he had nothing. I mean, he told reporters after the game that he was essentially making up pitches as he went along because he just had command of nothing. And you're right. I mean, Cole Hamels going forward is going to have a lot of questions to answer internally in that clubhouse, in that city. I also think we shouldn't overlook the play that Johnny Damon made in Game 4 because, remember, it's 2-1. In games, the Yankees had just blown the lead. Java Chamberlain had given up a home run to Pedro Feliz. Top of the ninth inning, two outs, nobody on base. Johnny Damon reaches, and then he has a double steal with the infield shifted over. and I wish I had thought of this, but I got to give credit to Keith Olbermann. I saw him on his show the other night, the 10 smartest plays in World Series history, and he thinks this is arguably the smartest play that we have ever seen in a World Series, and I don't think there's any question about that with all that went into it, and in the end, all that it meant for the Yankees as they wanted to win the World Series.
You know, and back to Cole Hamels, you talked about his possible future and all that went on. How about the guy that started for the Phillies last night? Pedro Martinez goes four innings, gives up four runs. What's his future? Is it with the Phillies? Is it with another team, or is he done?
He certainly showed enough to warrant a contract with another team, but I don't think there's anyone who's going to think he would come in and be a guy who's going to start 30 to 35 games for you. It's more likely that you'd bring him in, he'd start 15 games. And the question is, does Pedro want that? Does he want to come in a diminished role for half a season as he did this year? And I got the feeling, and you know, there was an exchange when Charlie Manuel walked over to Pedro to tell him that he was out of the game after four innings last night. I think Pedro was a little embarrassed that in a big spot, he just didn't have enough fastball at age 37 to beat the hitters. And I kind of wonder if that's going to play on his thinking going into next year.
Mike and Mike Busteroni is with us. And so as we look back on it here, we look back on a postseason in which 15 of the 30 games were decided by one run or two runs, close games. You didn't get any long series. You didn't get a decisive game seven in the World Series, which, you know, baseball was rooting for. TV ratings good. Mighty Yankees win, which means a lot of fans across the country are put out. You should be reading our email this morning. We'll get to some of these people writing, you know, Yankees with a dollar sign in the S and suggesting that they bought this thing, and they're not going to be happy to hear you say that they will have a lot more money to spend this offseason than anybody else. How do we look back on the postseason of 2009?
It was a great postseason in terms of the competition. Certainly we spent a lot of time talking about the umpires and instant replay, but let's face it, day to day, from that one game play-in game between the Tigers and the Twins and to the series between the Cardinals and the Dodgers, the comebacks, I thought it was a great postseason. Yeah, too many off days. As you pointed out several times.
Several times.
But I thought by and large it was, and then you have these two great teams finish it up, but I understand, the concerns about what's on the horizon. There's no question that, you know, the disparity right now is an increasing concern within the sport. And when I'm in there later with you guys, I'll tell you the latest sign that, of the gap that's growing between the big market teams like the Yankees and the other teams, and it's gonna happen the next 37 days.
Well, that's a good tease from Buster
Olney.
That's
a great tease.
Hurry up and get in here. When is Buster in studio? 8:20 Eastern?
Oh, we got to wait a while.
All right, I can't. So an hour and 15 minutes to hear. I can't.
Okay.
Honestly, I'm not sure I can wait for that information. That's well teased, Buster. Well, we've taught
you
well.
Good job out of you.
Thank you, Robert.
See you guys.
Buster Olney on his way in here. Gave us a great tease. Said for those who are concerned about the disparity in the money in Major League Baseball, things are only on the verge of getting worse. Left us hanging. He's in studio now, and he's got some news that I think is going to make a lot of people even more concerned. Buster, thank you for doing this. What have you?
Well, what's going to happen here? We've seen in recent years that, and you said earlier, you know, the Yankees are able to keep their own free agents over time as players move on. And we've seen teams like Oakland, you know, see guys like Jason Giambi leave. Well, that now is drifting down into players arbitration eligible. In other words, to become a free agent, you need to play 6 years. To become eligible for arbitration, it's 3 to 5 years. Hearing from many general managers that sometime before the contract tender date, between now and the contract tender date of December 12th, you are going to see dozens of players simply cut free by teams because they don't want to pay them arbitration, i.e. some teams simply say they can't afford to pay these guys arbitration dollars. So you're going to see a guy like Garrett Atkins, who's driven in 99 runs three times over the last 4 years. You're going to see guys like Jerry Hermita, who's 25-year-old outfielder for the Marlins, who's probably just going to be cut free. I mean, literally, there might be as many as 100 players, according to general managers, just dumped out onto the market. And what's going to happen is, and I'm hearing something about something today, and I can't, I'm still trying to confirm it, but what's going to happen is that the bigger market teams are just going to come in and swoop up the best gambles among these guys. Jeremy Hermita has a lot of talent, but the Marlins can't wait for him anymore. They can't afford to wait and pay him $4 million. You know what? The Yankees or the Red Sox or the Mets might be able to. Jeff Francoeur probably would not have been tendered a contract by the Braves. The Mets pick him up. They can keep him. That's the next place where the disparity is going to come into play.
So how does this ever get better?
Well, I mean, let's face it. I don't think it's ever going to be perfect. And, you know, I heard you guys read that email about, well, the NFL has agreed, you know, the owners in New York agreed to keep a level playing field. That seems to be kind of blowing up with Jerry Jones a little bit, correct?
But again, as Greeny said, it is different. I mean, they're sharing TV money that everybody's getting. So,
right. Yeah. But with baseball, it's never going to be a level playing field. I think that there'll be adjustments and tweaks along the way. But there was a trade during the off day just a couple days ago, which absolutely told you everything about where this is right now. And by the way, I don't think these two statements are mutually exclusive. The Yankees did a great job this year. They spent their money very well, but there's also a problem. The other day, during the off day, the Tampa Bay Rays traded second baseman Aki Iwamura to the Pirates for a prospect, and in return, the reason why they made the trade was to save $650,000 in a buyout. Iwamura goes to the Pirates, and he now becomes, at $4.8 million, their highest-paid player. That's how much Alex Rodriguez makes in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it is.
Mike and Mike Buster only is here, but that's raining on the parade for this day, and the parade will actually be tomorrow in New York. And so let's look at what they did right here, because the Yankees, they've spent more money than anybody over the last 9 years and not had a championship to show for it. This year, instead of Randy Johnson, instead of Kevin Brown, instead of a lot of older players, they went out and got young guys in their prime who were ready to come up and take the ball in the postseason the way CC Sabathia did, the way AJ Burnett for the most part did. And then it was Alex Rodriguez stepping up huge as well.
Yeah, there's no question. I think Brian Cashman deserves a ton of credit. In the fall of 2005, when his contract was up, he went to George Steinbrenner when George was still overseeing day-to-day operations. He said, look, this has to change. We cannot continually go in this cycle of overspending on older players, and not having a core of young players coming up through the farm system. We have to redevelop the farm system. Well, they did that. You know, getting guys like Jabba Chamberlain, Phil Hughes, Melky Cabrera, Robinson Cano, they brought them along, but they also were more selective in how they spent their money. In past years, you know they would have been the team that traded for Johan Santana. They absolutely, George Steinbrenner, if he'd been running the team, would have said, forget the future, I'm just going to throw the dollars at the biggest and best guy available right now. Instead, what Brian Cashman did, and he took a ton of criticism for it at the time, he said, look, we're not going to trade Phil Hughes. We're going to lay back because next winter we're going to spend money on a big-time free agent. And the guy he had his eye on all the time was CC Sabathia. And they outbid the Boston Red Sox for Mark Teixeira, A.J. Burnett, and all three of those guys were good as players, you know, better than good in the case of Teixeira and Sabathia, but they also were great in the clubhouse.
So as the Yankees will try and get back to the World Series next year, and the Phillies will try and get back for a third time to the World Series next year, on each team, what do you think could be a major move that could be done?
Well, I think for the Yankees, it's going to be, what are they going to do with the back end of the rotation? As much as we've talked about Jabba Chamberlain, who knows right now what his future is. I think the Yankees will continue to try to develop him as a starting pitcher. Maybe next year will be the year that if it doesn't go well early, they'll say, finally, okay, we're going to put him in the bullpen. And on the Phillies side, I mean, there are moves they can make. They have to make a decision on third baseman Pedro Feliz. Adrian Beltre might be a nice fit for them as a free agent. He's a great defensive third baseman. But let's face it, the winter is going to be about Cole Hamels and Brad Lidge. I think because Lidge just signed a long-term contract, they're kind of locked into him for next year. But the question about whether or not the Phillies are going to get back to the World Series, I think, will be determined by how well Cole Hamels bounces back.
25 years old. I mean, every reason to think, with so much of his future ahead.
Totally
of him,
agree.
It would be ridiculous, I think, at this point to give up on him. I didn't like the way he handled this. Almost no one did. He did not pitch well at all in this series. No one, I think, could argue other than that, or really all year long. But the idea of giving up on a guy who's 25 years old would be ridiculous. All right, how about Alex Rodriguez? What also should not be forgotten is that when A-Rod was out the first month of the season, Mark Teixeira wasn't hitting at all, and the Yankees didn't look very good. I remember people talking about Joe Girardi getting fired at one point. And then A-Rod came back, and they were 90-44 with him in the lineup, 11-4 in the playoffs. That's 101-48 with Alex Rodriguez in the lineup. So while there will be some people that will never get past what happened in February,
right,
his legacy, I think, as a player took an enormous step in the right direction this year.
I don't think he's ever going to get booed in Yankee Stadium in the same way, because, you know, in the Yankees world, You got to have a ring unless you're Don Mattingly, unless you're Mel Stoudemire. You have to have a ring to be really part of the club. And so I think he's beyond that. But I also think that, a lot of fans will look at him and say, hey, this guy, I mean, for all that happened in the past, he really did work through his issues. And,
yeah.
And what's, the thing is, we always had side issues with Alex Rodriguez, which always seemed to obscure from the fact that he always played hard. He's always prepared hard. He's always been a terrific player. Well, I think everything that happened spring training allowed him to push all that stuff to the side and just focus on the baseball. And we really, I think, found out on the October stage for the first time, again, he's a great player.
Yeah, he's absolutely a great player. So as we look over the season, as Buster keeps grabbing his phone because he keeps getting texts.
Buster on the verge, I think, of having a major story to break here. And he's dying to do it on the show, and frankly, so are we.
Yeah, so are we. But how do you see this whole – how did this whole baseball season fall for you?
I thought it was a terrific season. I mean, all the storylines that we had, from Zach Greinke of the Kansas City Royals, all the excitement of the postseason. I know we talked a lot about the umpires, and there's no question the disparity is a huge issue going forward. But I tell you what, I thought overall it was an excellent season for Major League Baseball.
And finally, Buster, and you know what? Don't go anywhere. You have to be on SportsCenter a little while, right? But sit here, because if you get this text, you're waiting for
I've never seen
right
the phone
in.
Working so quickly over here, except when Mort's in the room.
I'm a big fan. Hideki Matsui wins the MVP. I think Mike and I both think that was probably as good a choice as you could have made, considering the way the series broke. Will that have been his last moment as a baseball player in the United States?
I think there is a chance that it is, an excellent chance, because here's the bottom line. At his age and where baseball's gone, I mean, Bobby Abreu got $5 million last winter. Hideki Matsui would have to take a major pay cut in order to, make that happen.
So you don't think the Yankees will do it? You don't think anyone else would do it?
I don't think Matsui would accept what the Yankees would
offer. So, exactly. So you think at that point?
I think it's going to wind up being Johnny Damon who's retained, and Hideki Matsui moves on. And I don't think any other team is going to step up and offer him as much as he could make back in Japan.
So he wears his ring and takes his MVP trophy and flies
what a way
back
to go.
Japan and gets a hero's welcome.
Yeah. What a way to go.
Yeah. All right, Buster, well done. Stay here. Stay close. Buster will be around. He's feverishly. We're dying for him to break a story here on Mike and Mike. It may happen. We'll see where it goes. Buster only jumping back in studio here, running back and forth between our studio and the SportsCenter studio. We've been talking, and clearly you've been hearing it, the conversation this morning about the financial situation in baseball. We'll have Brian Cashman coming up next. But you're of the opinion that this offseason is going to be in its own way worse than last year was.
Yes, and we're going to see examples of how the disparity between the two teams is going to get worse. I mentioned the expectation among general managers there might be anywhere from 70 to 100 players non-tendered in that 3 to 5 year service time, guys like Garrett Atkins, Jeremy Hermita. Now, this morning, there was a lot of, buzz about maybe Mark Teen of the Royals, who's a solid player, one of their, better veteran hitters, might be on his way to being traded. That's not true, but the expectation among rival general managers is he is going to be traded. And here's the thing. He's making $5 million, and he's become too expensive for the Royals. And the expectation is a team like the Red Sox or the White Sox, a big market team, is going to snap him up, and we're going to see that repeatedly with other players in that group.
Yeah, help me out real quickly with this. The revenue money that teams get, like the Royals they get, A, what is the area of how much they get, and B, are they required to spend X amount of it? I don't know if listeners really know what they have to spend.
They're not required to spend it. For a lot of teams, I mean, the money is basically lifeblood. In order to break even... they're having to spend the money that they're getting from the Yankees. The Yankees are servicing the other teams, there's no question.
Yeah, and they can spend it in different ways. Remember, we had this whole discussion, and Bob Dupay called and yelled at us, and he was right, that you don't have to spend it by going out and buying a free agent.
Right,
you put it into scouting and things like that, into player development and that sort of thing. So there are ways the money is being spent. They're doing, to some degree, what they can.
That's exactly right.
The system, however, is clearly imperfect. It always will be. They'll strive to make it better.